Gar and I, as you know, as we sit here together and talk about this, we understand accountability, and we are accountable for what this team did this year. We don't run away from it. We accept it. That's on us.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA, your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
For me to be here in the NBA organization, such a historic organization, the Chicago Bulls, so it's just a dream come true for me.
Live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday.
This is going to be a process. You'll snap your fingers and it all happens at once, but that's the plan moving forward.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day. Locked On Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm Jordan Malley along with Matt Peck. We're live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, we're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. That's 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. Follow us on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Remember, we just set up a brand new text and voicemail line. Our number is 331-979-1369. You can send text immediately while you're listening to the show. They will arrive in our mailbox, and we'll be able to respond to you guys too. So remember that when you're sending in text, and we'll see them all, we can respond to them. If you've got a question, comment, concern, you can also leave us voicemails too. So there's a voicemail line that'll dump straight to our email. That number again is 331-979-1369, our official Locked On Bulls number. So make sure you're sending all your questions, comments, anything you got for us, Bulls related or NBA related, send it to that number. We will see those texts in a matter of seconds. But we're back here, kind of a light episode today, to be honest with you guys, to be forefront here. Obviously, the Bulls don't play till tomorrow. They're taking on the Dallas Mavericks at home with pretty solid tank implications here.
But Tank battle!
On today's episode, first, Matt, I got to ask you, did you see James Harden absolutely destroy an end?
Oh, my God. I don't know what was better, the crossover or the stare down.
Oh, no.
Because they were equally good.
They created memes across Twitter that I think was fitting, because not only was it James Harden, he had the swag to do it too on the Clippers floor, and then just to stare him down and then knock down the three, like that one, that might be one of the moves for the year in terms of NBA plays of the year.
Yeah, and we can call it right now, right? MVP race is over. It's James Harden.
I would say so.
I think it's Harden. I mean, I can't, it was NBA Math or one of those Twitter handles earlier today put up their most recent like TPA for all NBA players across the board. And I mean, Harden is way out in front of everybody. LeBron is behind him, the next closest, but Harden is way out in front of everybody.
Can I just tell you that I heard this stat the other day about LeBron? He is the oldest player in the NBA to average a triple-double for a month straight. The oldest player to ever do that. Think about LeBron James. He's been in the league for 15 years, and he's averaged a triple-double for a month straight. Like, that's insanity. And the fact that, like, I know we talk about James Harden, and we talk about some of these other candidates for MVP that are having outstanding years. I feel like at this point in LeBron's career, he sometimes forgets about. You know what I'm saying? Like, in the terms of, like, we are so used to his greatness and what he's able to do with teams and how good he is on a night in and night out basis, that sometimes I feel like we forget how good he is comparative to some of these other guys' seasons. Obviously, Russell Westbrook's season last year was insanity. Averaging a triple-double is insane, and James Harden is having a career year, but to average a triple-double in a month at, what, age 32, 33, the way LeBron has, it's just absolute insanity.
Look, I mean, yes, sometimes I think the greatness of LeBron gets ignored or passed over because of a different individual in the NBA having a season like Westbrook had last year, having a season like Harden is having right now. And, you know, there are a lot of people, a lot of NBA fans who think, you know, LeBron James should win MVP every year. It's just that simple. I would disagree. And as far as all of this hype that LeBron got for being the oldest player to average a triple-double for a month, it's the month of February. It's the shortest month of the season, and it's shortened by the All-Star break. So really, how many games are you playing there? And yes, as good as LeBron James is, and I think I was actually getting into a Twitter debate about this with one of our Locked On Bulls listeners. I want to say it was Vincent, but I just there are some people who think the triple-double stat is overrated. I think that's a silly narrative. If you can put up double digits in three different stats in your box score, you know, on a consistent basis, that's impressive. Yeah, okay, if you miss it by one assist or one rebound, et cetera, it's like, okay, well, you didn't get the triple-double, so they're kind of arbitrary in that sense. But still, if you can consistently do that, I think it is not overrated. I think it's very impressive. But for as long as LeBron has been playing, what, this 1 month, 15 years, and this 1 month he manages to average a triple-double and everybody's going gaga over it? Look, and I'm not trying to diminish LeBron. I'm saying for all of the greatness that he has given us over the course of his career, this particular feat, not all that impressive in my opinion.
And that's crazy to think about. Like, just think about the statement that you just said. Averaging a triple-double for a month is not all that impressive because of what LeBron has done, though. Like, that's the insanity part of, like, where conversations are at now with LeBron. And I feel like... And there was also a conversation, too, that I was listening to before we get to some Bulls stuff that I want to bounce off of you, Matt. Do you feel like the way in which people stood with Michael when he was in his prime and then even after, and how it's carried over to this generation, and how people always consistently compare MJ and LeBron together? And do you feel like the way that we're watching it now, at least the millennial generation and even Generation Z before that, the younger kids that are watching LeBron, and I feel like this even has a mix of Steph Curry in there, but for LeBron specifically, once his career is over and we get to a new generation of basketball, maybe 10, 15, 20 years from now, do you feel like fans and our generation, maybe more specifically the demographic between, I don't know, 24 and 31, are going to stand the same way that they do with Michael, or the way Michael Jordan fans did while LeBron was playing? How do you feel that's going to play out? And do you see that kind of paralleling each other the way it happened in the 90s and then carrying over to now into LeBron's career? And I don't know who would take that role in terms of the way LeBron has tried to compete with Michael's shadow in the NBA, but do you feel like that's going to happen once LeBron's over, his career's over and done with?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely interesting to contemplate that and wonder about what kind of legacy LeBron will leave and how younger players will be compared to him the way he's been, perhaps in some ways unfairly, compared to Jordan his entire career. I mean, at this point, there is no doubt that LeBron, when he's all said and done, his career is over, will probably outrank Michael in cumulative statistics in pretty much every category, because he's already played more seasons than MJ, and MJ missed two of the prime seasons of his prime years playing baseball. So, like, you know, earlier this week, I think it was, that LeBron became the only player in NBA history to reach 30,000 points, 8,000 rebounds, 8,000 assists. And by the time he's finished, that could easily be 35,000 points, 10,000 rebounds, and 10,000 assists. And that would be an incredible benchmark to say, all right, let's see if anyone can ever do that again in the history of the NBA, because LeBron has had this incredibly successful and healthy, longevity blessed career. I don't think we'll probably never see anybody put up the type of numbers that LeBron has been putting up. As far as comparing to the next generation, I mean, personally, because I grew up in the 90s Jordan era, you know, Bulls fandom, Jordan will always be the be all end all benchmark of NBA greatness. And this is something that his teammate, a guy who he helped win six championships, Scottie Pippen, has said repeatedly, like, statistically, LeBron has already surpassed MJ in most everything other than, you know, number of times leading the league in scoring and average scoring points per game over the course of his career. Other than that, there's not much that LeBron has not passed MJ already in terms of stats. But greatest of all time conversation has so much more involved in it than cumulative stats. So LeBron still has some work to do, in my opinion, in that category. And as far as the younger generation of NBA fans, I think it's clear to say, like, if you're too young and don't remember watching Michael Jordan play, if you weren't alive at all by the time after MJ retired, LeBron is that guy that you will compare people to moving forward, because he has been the most dominant guy in the league. There's a reason that the team with LeBron James on it has been to the NBA Finals for 8 straight years. That's no coincidence.
Yeah, and I know you and I don't like... I hate this conversation of the comparisons between LeBron and Michael Jordan. I just think we're so far past all of the comparisons you can make and the arguments for and against each other. I think I just find myself sometimes when I'm watching LeBron, or the fact that he's even in the league and continue to play at a high rate, I feel like sometimes I take advantage of that. Like, I forget that, you know, there's going to be a time, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 years, I don't know how long it's going to take, where this LeBron James that we're seeing right now is no longer. And I feel like for some fans out there too, whether you love him or you hate him, take advantage of watching LeBron every chance you can, because the thing that's dawned on me most, especially coming down to the end of this season, is that we might not get too many more seasons of LeBron James. And like, for whatever it was, the rivalry between Miami that Chicago had, and when he was there with the Big Three, and then also in Cleveland too, early on in his years. Like, I get that there's that sort of, I guess, I wouldn't call it hate, because it's hard for me, if you're a basketball fan, it's hard to hate LeBron and hate what he does. But it's got that same type of feel that the way the Pistons fans hated Michael Jordan, in that same kind of respect. Obviously, you've got respect for his game, but the same kind of respect that there was hate because you couldn't get past him. So just a kind of a note there for people, like if you don't pay a whole lot of attention to LeBron, or you only watch one or two or three games every month or two, like, tune into LeBron, because that's going to be something that, especially if you're younger, that's going to be something you can tell your kids about. And the same way that I feel like my dad was telling me about Michael Jordan stories, or even before that, players that came before that, stories, those that I wasn't old enough to remember. So that's going to be the same thing, I feel like, with LeBron James.
Russell Westbrook, who averaged a triple-double for the entirety of the 2016-17 season, the first person to average a triple-double over a full season since Oscar Robertson in the early 60s. All he needs to do is uptick his rebounds a little bit and keep his assists where they are, and Westbrook is about to do it again this season, or come very close. Because not only is he averaging 25 points per game, but right now Westbrook is averaging 10.3 assists and 9.6 rebounds. So, cool. Like, congrats LeBron for averaging a triple-double in February. Russell Westbrook is on the cusp of doing it again, back-to-back, for the second straight full 82-game season. In my opinion, way more impressive.
All right, so I want to get to a question that I've been kind of throwing around a little bit. Austin Hutchinson texted me this, and he's one of our Bulls writers at LockedOnBulls.com. And I was curious, because I don't know what my reaction immediately was. I got to sit back and think about this for a second. So, Matt, without thinking about this, and just answer this question immediately, yes or no, would you like John Wall in a Bulls uniform?
Yes, but I say that hesitantly, because he's 27 years old.
Okay, so I took this as a weird question, because I don't know what... I don't think that the Wizards would be willing to part with him, but there are a couple things in there that I feel like, if the Wizards don't feel like they have a lot right now, and this is why the question came up, is would you trade Chris Dunn and a Bulls first round pick this year in order to acquire John Wall? And what would that do for this Bulls team? Would you be... That was the question posed to me, and I had to sit back and think about it for a minute. But I want to hear what you're going to say first before I give my answer, because there's a lot of layers to it, and I feel like there was a lot of things that are going to be similar to what you're saying. But if you had to give up Chris Dunn and a first round pick, I don't know, I'm not saying it's either the Bulls lottery pick or that Pelicans pick, or maybe a future first round pick, would you do that in order to acquire John Wall? Remember, John Wall is 27 this season, and he's got an extension on his contract as well. But would you do that deal in order to make the Bulls better right now this summer?
See, to me, it absolutely depends on what kind of first round pick you're talking about. You're saying, would you trade him for Chris Dunn and a first round pick? Well, to me, I think my answer would differ if it was the Bulls' own pick right now, which projects to be a top 10 lottery pick, or if it's the Pelicans' pick or a future first round pick. Because if it's the Bulls' own top 10 projected lottery pick and Chris Dunn, my tendency would be to say no. I would not make that trade. But the Pelicans pick, which now might end up being somewhere in the low to mid-20s, trading that and Chris Dunn for a 27-year-old John Wall, I would be more inclined to do that. Still, the recent injury issues, especially because he is a point guard and they are knee injury issues, is a concern to me. And he's 27 years old, not getting any younger. I mean, if the Bulls, part of the Bulls' logic in letting Nico go was, well, obviously they're trying to fix the Nico versus Bobby situation, but also they saw the fact that Nico's age didn't really work in the timeline of what the Bulls are trying to do. Then John Wall kind of fits into that same category. I know 27 doesn't sound that old, but for where the Bulls are right now and when they are projected to try to actually become contenders in their era of, all right, LeBron is fading, the Warriors dynasty has broken apart, you know, maybe the Bucks still really haven't built anything around Antetokounmpo, who knows where Anthony Davis is, the Timberwolves are on the cusp. John Wall, you know, it's the same reason the Bulls didn't want to pay Jimmy Butler a truckload of money, because they thought by the time he is, you know,
thank you,
30 something, what, you know, in the back end of a contract, that's a lot of money to give to a player that's past his prime.
Let me just throw this out there too for you. So I didn't even think about the age thing like that. To me, that wasn't even my first concern about this. It was the fact that he signed that extension not too long ago, and in starting in 2019, he's going to be owed $37.4 million per season. $37.4 million per season for him at what, age 30? And so I thought about that, and like the same thing goes to the plan of trading away Jimmy Butler. Like if this was the route that you were going to go, then they would have just signed Jimmy Butler to money that was probably going to come somewhere similar. Obviously, Jimmy Butler would probably be eligible to earn more money than John Wall at that point. But I also thought too, it's like, okay, there was all that talk in the summer about potentially Kyrie coming to the Bulls if Jimmy Butler would have been here. And obviously, if things would have been different and the Bulls figured that they would be on different paths, I would have said, then why would you trade Jimmy Butler away? Why wouldn't you have tried to go after Kyrie? I think the money situation is the biggest part of this whole thing. Like, I get it if the people aren't sold on Chris Dunn yet, and you figure, well, you got Zach LaVine, Lowry Marketing looks pretty decent. If you add John Wall to this mix, and maybe you can get another all-star out of this, maybe then you got something going. But to me, having to pay a John Wall, like you said, with knee injuries and him making that type of money next season, like, that to me, and then on top of that, you can't forget that you have to pay Zach LaVine this summer. So you're going to have two guys mixed up for maybe possibly over $50 million a year in two guys, in Zach LaVine and John Wall. Like, to me, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense for what the Bulls are doing. I thought it was interesting, though, just because of the player that John Wall is. I feel like there's a want in this city for a really dominant all-star point guard. And I think, I don't know if that comes from what we saw with Derrick Rose.
I wonder why that is, because we had one for a while.
I wonder if that comes from
awesome.
Derrick Rose, obviously. On top of the want for a point guard, like, obviously, to me, it just doesn't make any sense. It was kind of an interesting trade point. Like, I get it if Washington's trying to shop what they're doing and if the Bulls feel like they're at that next step. But I don't know if I would want to sacrifice all the cap room and flexibility that the Bulls have on a guy that's going to be 28, has knee problems, and you have to give up a first round pick and a guy that you got in a deal for Jimmy Butler that you think is going to be pretty decent. So to me, I just said I'd rather not do it right now and figure out what the Bulls are going to do. And I'd rather take my chances in free agency rather than having to trade for a star. Maybe you're a year, 2 years towards the plan of having a star in this league come to the Bulls. So to me, I feel like the timelines are off. The cost of John Wall would be way too much. And the injuries scare me too. Like we said with Zach LaVine, like obviously he is 5 years younger than John Wall is, but those injuries scare me. And obviously it probably scares a lot of Bulls fans just from everything that the Bulls have gone through with not only Derrick Rose, but Joakim Noah and some of these other players that had constant nagging injuries. So that's something that does bother me. So that's why I was like, I would probably not take the deal. And it's more so about the money than having to trade away Chris Dunn or the pick. It's about the money that would have to be owed to John Wall, and not only him, but Zach LaVine too.
Yeah, I mean, in the 2022-23 season, John Wall is owed $46.8 million.
Jesus.
Look, John Wall is a damn good player, but that is an insane amount of money for him. And look, I don't think anyone in Bulls Nation would try to make the argument that Chris Dunn is better than John Wall. Obviously, John Wall would be an upgrade at the point guard position right now. I'm pretty sure nobody would even really make the argument that right now Chris Dunn has the potential to be as good as John Wall. I'm not saying that that's impossible, that Chris Dunn can develop into a player of that caliber, an all-star player of that caliber. I'm saying right now it doesn't look all that likely. And even with that, making that trade and handing over Dunn and our first round pick for Wall, given the age, given the contract, to me, no, I would not do that.
So quickly shifting gears here, are you excited to see Jarrell Eddie?
Yeah.
So the Bulls signed Jarrell Eddie to a 10-day contract. They're going to give him a look. I don't know what that's going to mean. I mean, we were cracking jokes at the beginning of the season about Jarrell Eddie and like him getting minutes, and we were just saying, oh, wow, this is the way the season's going to go. I mean, I don't know. I didn't check into his stats in the G League because I'll be completely honest with Bulls fans, I don't really care. He's not going to be a part of this. They can give him a look all he wants, and maybe that's just another sly way for the front office to say, yeah, you know what? We really want to be in that top five, so we're just gonna keep throwing all these guys out there that we can to see that we can quote unquote give them looks, and in turn still lose games. And obviously the Bulls, you know, they're tied up with a lot of these teams in this tank, and this is going to come down to the final games of the season. That's what's crazy. But also shout out to Dallas, who the Bulls are playing tomorrow night, who blew the opportunity to win a game last night against the Oklahoma City Thunder. Classic.
Oh, so close. Went all the way to OT, man. I was really hoping they'd pull that one
out. So classic move by another tanking team. Right now, as we sit here, the Bulls sit at the eighth position at 20-41. They're only a half game out of that seventh spot behind the Brooklyn Nets. Funny thing is really they're only two games out of the number one slot, where Orlando and Sacramento are tied, and Phoenix are tied for a three-way battle for that. And Memphis is only a half game out. Dallas is sitting there at a half game out, and Atlanta is sitting there at a half game out. So there's going to be a lot of movement. These eight teams in the next 20 games are going to have a lot of shuffling to do. And the Bulls, like, I hate to say this, but the Bulls are going to have to be very bad for the next 20 games to finish up this season to try to squeak themselves into that top five.
It is going to be tough. The good news is that we do have some games coming up on the NBA schedule where some of these teams are tanking teams are playing each other. So at least one of them will be adding to their wins. Because right now, you know, the Bulls are, you know, the one of two 20-win teams with Brooklyn. Atlanta, Dallas, Phoenix all at 19. And then Memphis, Sacramento, Orlando, 18. But if you look at just like the upcoming schedule this weekend, Orlando has a winnable game home against the Pistons, who have not been playing very well recently. You got, let's see, Memphis and Orlando playing each other on Saturday. You have Sacramento hosting Utah on Saturday. Maybe that's a winnable game for them. And then Sunday, you got Phoenix and Atlanta playing each other. So one of them is going to pick up a win. Like there's a chance that the Bulls can kind of squeak back into the likelihood of getting themselves a top five pick here. And of course, obviously, some of it will come down to luck and ping pong balls, but they need to continue this dutiful work they're doing, which is quote unquote player evaluation, and feed those minutes to Felicio and Campaign and Noah Vonleh. And they're not breaking any rules. It's funny, like, I'm sure, Jordan, you noticed the recent, like, issued statement that Adam Silver gave about tanking, and that the league's going to be watching teams closely as far as actually actively trying to lose. But that's not what the Bulls are doing. They have player evaluation as the reasoning for these roster shakeup, this lineup shakeup, and they need to stick to that plan. It's been working for the last five games. They need to stick to it.
Finally, I just wanted to wrap this up a little bit. Obviously, I want to touch on three teams. The Dallas Mavericks, Atlanta Hawks, and Phoenix Suns are all ahead of the Bulls in the tank. I just wanted to give you a quick look at the five games that all three of those teams are going to be playing. So Dallas has the Bulls, obviously, tomorrow night. They've got the Pelicans, the Nuggets, the Grizzlies, and the Rockets coming up. So I would say probably three out of the five of those are guaranteed losses. The Bulls and the Grizzlies, obviously, big tank implications. So the Mavericks out of the three teams, I think, are the best of the three group of these teams. But they find ways to just blow games after they're in contention of beating teams like the Thunder. The Atlanta Hawks host Golden State, which they'll be lucky if they get out of the gym under 40 points losing. Then they have the Phoenix Suns, the Toronto Raptors, the Indiana Pacers, and then they finish up Sunday, March 11th with the Chicago Bulls. So also some variety in there where the Atlanta Hawks are playing top teams. So they'll probably end up with at least three losses there. Like I said, again, the Bulls can help themselves out in this stretch of five games where they might end up losing some of these games. And then finally, the Phoenix Suns take on Oklahoma City, Atlanta, Miami, Oklahoma City again, and then Charlotte. So for the Phoenix Suns, hopefully they'll start losing some games too, and some of these teams are teams that maybe they'll be beatable against. But I think the one worry I'm with is the Atlanta Hawks and the Phoenix Suns. We need those teams to win some games here, and maybe the Phoenix Suns can do that against an Oklahoma City team. Maybe they can steal one on the road against Miami, or even Charlotte when they play at the back half in a couple weeks. The one thing interesting thing as we wrap up here, though, Matt, is right now if the NBA draft went on today, the Phoenix Suns would have three picks in the top 15. Remember, they got the first round pick from Milwaukee in the Bledsoe Monroe trade, which is protected 1 through 10 and 17 through 30. So that pick right now is at number 16. And they also got a pick that's protected 1 through 7 from Miami this year. That pick's at number 15. So the Phoenix Suns could end up with three picks in the top 15 of this draft. Do you feel like that there might be any incentive if they end up with three picks in the top 15 that might be a suitable trade partner for the Bulls in terms of maybe finding out a deal if the Bulls want to move up, or if the Bulls maybe want to take on one of their young guys in Phoenix? I don't know what you would be able to move to Phoenix in order to do that, but three picks in the first round, and you've seen what Phoenix has done with all of their young talent, which is the case in which I don't want the Bulls to get into, is not have any veterans around and really go out there and have no idea what the hell you're doing. So maybe a possible interesting trade partner this summer if the Bulls are looking to move up in the draft or acquire picks, or maybe move for some young talent.
It is an interesting hypothetical. I think if Phoenix does end up with, say they have the top pick when all is said and done, I think that Phoenix would use that to draft Luka Doncic, because their backcourt situation is still kind of a mess. You know, they had the whole Bledsoe situation that they brought in Elfrid Payton, but he's really not a long-term solution at that position, I don't think. And you'd think that the Suns would love to find a versatile point guard, and, you know, Doncic projects to be one of the best playmaking point guards that the league has seen as a rookie in a long time. Pairing him with Booker and Josh Jackson, I mean, I think that's a great trio of young players that Phoenix would love to have. So if Phoenix finds themselves in a position where they can get their guy with, say, the number one pick, or maybe it's the number two pick, I find it very unlikely that they would trade down from that one to allow the Bulls to trade up. But, I mean, it is an interesting point that they look like they are going to have, as you said, as many as three picks in the first round. And, you know, maybe their plan is to use all of them. I feel like they've used a lot of picks on a lot of young talent recently, and other than Booker, none of it has really panned out yet. So they may decide what they want to do is just take three swings and keep all of these kids, as opposed to packaging some of them. And as I mean, I don't really know what they would want from the Bulls. You know, should the Bulls try to strike up some kind of trade to see if they could get one of Phoenix's picks or move up? You know, I may, like, so say the Bulls swap them there, whatever the Bulls end up pick ends up being, maybe it's five, maybe it's six, maybe it's four, to move up two or three spots and then give that their pick to Phoenix. Like, maybe, but I really don't see that happening.
Yeah, the only other thing I could think of is if Phoenix wants to somehow, if they don't end up with that first pick and maybe they end up between three and five, or six, maybe the Bulls don't feel like Chris Dunn is really that big of a piece. And maybe they try to move Chris Dunn to Phoenix for something if they want to move up or for an extra pick in this draft specifically. Like, there's a lot of moving parts too. And I think it was more so a suitable trade partner when we had a star in Jimmy Butler and they were maybe looking to take that next step. A deal couldn't be done. Just finally, I wanted to say this. How bad does Josh Jackson look, though, outside of just being a defender? I am so glad the Bulls didn't have the option to trade or draft him in the top five, because, man, he does not look like anywhere near the player that we all thought he was going to be coming into the draft.
No, you're right. He doesn't. I mean, it's funny that everybody leading up to that draft was saying, like, all right, well, you know, it's going to be Fultz, and then it's going to be Josh Jackson. Everybody loves Josh Jackson. Everybody wants Josh Jackson. A lot of people expected the Celtics to take Josh Jackson, and then the Celtics surprised everybody and went with Jason Tatum instead, and that right now is looking like a very good decision.
So with that, I think that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Remember, we have a text and voicemail line set up for you guys. Instantly, we're going to get all of your feedback. You can leave us voicemails. We're going to be playing the best voicemails once a week. So if you've got a rant, a question, a comment, go ahead and call that number at 331-979-1369. That's 331-979-1369. You can also text us at that number too as well. So save that number in your phone as Locked On Bulls. You can send us text messages while you're listening to the show. We love the feedback. We've already gotten a boatload of text messages from people listening, so please keep doing that. We love hearing your comments. We can respond too, so we're pretty quick about responding, especially if you've got a question or a comment. We love to hear from our fans and from the fans of the Chicago Bulls and the listeners out there, so we want to hear from you. So remember, text or call that line, leave us a voicemail or leave us a text at 331-979-1369. Make sure you're following us on social media too, on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Remember, we're live on Dash Radio three times a week. That's Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. That's Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, and the Dash Radio app on the Nothing But Net channel. That's 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year of Nothing But Basketball Talk. Some great shows on there if you want to kind of expand your horizons of teams, and you'll be able to hear local experts talking about them from your favorite teams across the NBA on the Nothing But Net channel. But for Locked On Bulls, for Matt and Jordan, we are out. Have a great night.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com, part of FanRag Sports.